Hello, world. This is the Diversity Hires. Today, we are going to be talking about our stories of finding and securing professional representation. We are also going to be talking to the homies, writing team supreme, Courtney Perdue and Bandu Saidu, aka B, young writers taking the screenwriting television world by storm. You ready, Shu?
This episode is all about the come up. That should be the title. The come up.
Let's call it that. The come up. Drop the music. Welcome to the Diversity Hires, where Sherman Shu shoot the shit about screenwriting.
We are two professional screen and television writers. We come here every week to break down the business, culture, and the craft of writing for film and television in this wonderful place we call Hollywood. I'm Shukri Hassan Tillman, a.k.a. Shu.
And I'm Sherman Payne, a.k.a. the greatest screenwriter of all time. Today, we want to talk a little bit about the evergreen topic, something people are always curious about, which is, how did you secure representation? What kind of representation did you secure? What's the difference between a manager and agent? How did you do it?
These are all super fantastic questions. And, you know, I have a brief story, like everybody who manages to get their first piece of representation does. It does not go the way I thought it would go. I remember being an aspiring writer and thinking that this was going to, you know, change my life, getting a manager and or agent. And initially that's all I sought. And then, you know, at a certain point, I took the advice from others, which I give to others too, which is like, just focus on the writing, man. Just be great. Not good. Try to be great. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good out there. There's not a lot of great. So try to be really great and things will fall into place. And ultimately, that's what happened. I mean, for me, brief story for me, as we've said on the podcast, we both went and got our MFAs in screenwriting from Columbia University. Shout out Columbia. Towards the end of my time at Columbia, because I spent 5 years there trying not to get a job. That's basically why I stayed in graduate school that long, as long as they would allow you to, and keep my on-campus apartment. And anyway, as that was ending, I had this television pilot that I had written maybe a year before in a professor's class. And, well, I guess all classes are a professor's class. What the fuck? And anyway, this professor who became a mentor of mine was in LA. He's also a television writer himself. He was in LA. He was at lunch with a producer friend of his who casually asked him, "Hey, do you have any students' work that you want me to read?" And he said, "Yeah, I got a couple." And mine was one of them. So he sent it off to this guy. This guy got back to me like very quickly after that and said, "Hey, I'd like to take this script around, see if I can sell it. Would you mind?" I said, "Great." I was so excited. I was about to graduate. So I thought, like, this is it, bro. I'm about to get fucking paid.
Yo, I mean, to back up, that's the thought, right? It's like,
immediately
you get a rep and then the next day you're driving to the bank with one of those old timey bags full of money that you're just going to dump on the teller's counter and be like, "I'm rich,"
with the dollar sign on printed on the back, like a fucking cartoon. Yes, exactly.
That's what you had in your mind.
This is what I had in my mind. And this wasn't even the rep. This was just a producer. This was just a producer dude.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This is just a producer dude. So I'm like, I'm about to get paid because he's going to sell this. He's an independent TV producer. He loves the script. He's going to show it to all these studios and networks. And I'm about to get paid. Sit back. My girlfriend, who's my wife at the time, was like, "Sit back, relax. I know I haven't had the rent for the last couple of months, but it's coming. Here it goes." Don't worry. That student loan I signed on, don't worry about it. Boom. 6 months pass, eight months pass, nothing. About a year goes by, the producer hits me up and says, listen, man, I tried. I went around, you know, it's got really good reads, but I don't think we're going to be able to sell it. Do you need, you know, like a manager? I said, yeah, of course. He said, okay, let me introduce you to a couple people with my recommendation. Mm-hmm. He did that. And long story short, I got with one manager who is my manager to this day, my main man, Stephen Gates. Shout out Stephen Gates, Ellipsis Entertainment. And he, this was in New York. And Stephen was very good to me and has been very good to me. And I'll say one big thing about this. I signed with, signed. We should talk about that. I'll let you handle that.
Okay, yeah.
But I signed with a manager, Stephen. And, you know, we tried to start getting out to try to get staffing, maybe to sell something, develop new material. And I thought I was going to have a job like in the next, you know, month at max.
Right.
Because I went back to editing reality TV and was just working a day job. And it took 2 years of working with my manager, being a representative writer, before I even sniffed a showrunner meeting.
Wow.
And 2 years. And during that 2 years, which is funny, and that's the last thing I say, during those 2 years, one part that was funny was that I was so twisted in my mind about how this was supposed to go that I thought my manager was like disappointed in me because I wasn't getting, I wasn't bringing him any work.
Early on, you feel like your reps are going to drop you at any point.
At any point.
You feel like you feel like you work for them.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Cause you think like, I'm supposed to be bringing this. This is one of the great, terrible and great moments of my relationship with my manager. I went to lunch with him at one time. This was probably a year or so into our working relationship. And I said, listen, something to the effect of, listen, I know I'm not bringing you any work. I haven't, clearly my samples haven't gotten the attention enough to get me an interview or a staffing opportunity or anything. And hey, man, if you got to drop me, I understand. It's no problem. And he looked at me like I had two fucking heads. And he was like, but very nicely, bro, I'm in this for the long haul, man. And I said, all right, all right. And lo and behold, you know, like I said, 10 years later or whatever it is, still my guy.
A few interesting things about that to tease our guests that are coming up. In the 2 years where you didn't even sniff a showrunner's meeting, In the 2 years since they've been working writers, they've risen from assistants to co-producers. So how does that make you feel, Shakri?
Make me feel like a fool. I don't know.
No,
like,
come on, it's not a fool. You just had a longer road. I think it's worked out for you.
You now have
generational wealth that you'll be that you'll be passing down to your kids. You got the Basquiats in the storage for them at anytime. That's like a blank check. You're good, man. You got that Jay-Z Beyonce wealth growing already.
I can't be rich with $300K in debt. I'm open about this because it's a national problem. But anyway. Yes.
Before I tell my version of how I secured a representation, can you real quick for the people tell me about why you went with a manager versus an agent and what is the difference between a manager and an agent? Because that's another question I see a lot.
Well, the answer to the first question is that I would have said yes to anyone who wanted to represent me.
Right.
And I would suggest that anybody say yes, unless they're trying to take money from you, I would say yes to anyone who wants to represent you at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It just happened that managers were the only people to, through this guy, were the only people to reach out to me. And that's who I ended up going with. The difference in the relationship, now that I've had a couple of different agents, along with my manager, you know, my manager is sort of like, he and I work to develop material. We work on sort of long range strategy. We work on sort of developing pitches. If I want to get the rights to a book that I might want to produce and write, he's involved in all of that. And we sort of, we talk a lot more often. Agents, I believe, have one single, solitary, simple job. Procure work. That's
it. Get money.
get money, procure work. Right. I don't need them to read drafts. They really don't want to do that. That's what I use my manager for. I don't need them to develop material for, with me. They don't want to do that. That's what I use a manager for. So that's the key difference in my relationship.
One's a creative, nurturer, long haul, and the other one's about getting those checks. And that's the difference. Managers are there to guide you through a career that will have ups and downs and to help you get creatively where you need to be and put you in touch with the right people who can really, you know, help you realize your creative visions and your creative aspirations. And agents do a little bit of that, but they are really there to negotiate and get you the most money possible when there's a job on the table. And they get you those jobs too. All right. So my story, I don't know, is it similar? Is it, I feel like everybody has a similar story that is very specific to them at the same time. I was also coming out of grad school. I had a script, which some professors had identified as commercially viable. I shared that script with a couple executives. You know, I sort of hustled all my contacts to meet with a couple executives. One executive introduced me to another. That executive read my work and passed it on to another executive who was at Disney at the time, running this diversity program that I don't even think Disney has anymore for feature writers. And this young creative executive who really liked my work was trying to get me on for this Disney feature writing fellowship. And I went through the whole application process with her, and we were pitching ideas and coming up with new stuff, and I was sending her work, and I was really trying to get the job. And at the end of the day, it did not work out for me. She was my champion, but her bosses just didn't think that I was ready for it. So when that fell through, I basically looked to her and said, well, okay, it didn't work out here, but you're obviously a fan of my work. What's good with managers though? Can you introduce me to any managers? And she said, yeah, I'll introduce you to some managers. So she hooked me up with the homie Brooklyn Weaver and Adam Marshall, who at the time were both at Energy Entertainment. And I set a meeting with them. And I went into the meeting and I had the whole entire meeting, and they said that they wanted to work with me. And I walked out not knowing what the hell that meant. I walked out of the meeting going, what does that even mean that they want to work with me? Did I sign with a manager? I don't think I signed with a manager because I didn't actually sign anything. There was no paper exchange. There was no formal offer.
Talk about it.
And so I walked out very, very confused. And I went back to my then girlfriend, now wife. And I said, something weird happened where they said they wanted to work with me, but I just must have missed the paperwork portion. I don't know if the paperwork is forthcoming, if they're going to send me a contract in the mail and then I'll have to sign it and get it notarized. And she's like, you dummy. That's it. You've signed with a manager. And I don't know. So I was very skeptical. I was like, I don't know what that means. I have no clue what just happened. So I actually called them. back up and I said, what does that mean? And they reiterated, yeah, Sherm, we like you. We want to work with you. And then I hung up the phone with no more clarity. And so,
dude, listen.
And so I was like, well, I have no idea what's going on. And then, listen, I'm like you. I had a very, very clear idea about what it would look like to sign with a rep and sign with a manager. And I thought that it was going to look a little bit like National Signing Day in high school athletics, where the athlete goes to the gym, and then I'll have like all the management hats in front of me on the table. There will be press there, Deadline, and you know, Hollywood Reporter will be there covering it, of course. And I'll pick which hat, and I'll say, hey guys, everybody, I want to tell you I'm taking my talents to next year to Energy. And then I'll put on the Energy hat and the flash bulbs will go off and I'll actually sign the paper there in front of the cameras. Okay, that's not the way it works. I mean, what I wish somebody would have told me at the time, and eventually, you know, a few days later, I talked to some people who actually knew what they were talking about and I understood what happened and that I did get signed to a manager. The word sign is a misnomer.
Yeah, you don't sign anything.
You don't actually sign anything. It's what's called a handshake deal. Yeah. Go ahead.
And if you do sign something, you actually might be working with a con artist. It is possible.
It's possible. You should do your research, because a lot of reputable, the biggest reputable places do not actually ask you to sign anything. And I also realized that the handshake deal might actually also be a misnomer, because I don't remember actually shaking hands either. But the idea is that it's an informal deal. It's sort of the honor system. And that can, and honestly, coming out, having never been in the film world before, that sounds crazy. I know. It sounds so crazy to me too. It sounded crazy to me at the time. It's like,
me too.
I'm going to be giving, if I make money, I'm going to be giving these people money, but there's no paperwork. Nothing. So weird. And, you know, and, but again, I'm like you, I've been with Adam now. Adam moved from Energy to another company and now he's at Management 360. We've been rocking together for years. We've made, I think, a pretty good amount of money together. I'm not one of his most profitable clients, but I think we've done all right. And we still have not signed anything except maybe a check authorization that allows them to sometimes receive my checks and cash them for me and deposit it in my account, which is more like payroll than it is a contract or an official agreement.
Exactly. And I don't know if you remember this, but you signed with a manager prior to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so this thing that you describe is so common, this experience, that I remember having it with you, in which I went, and I should shout out because I missed, and this is not a name droppy show, but for the sake of, since we are dropping manager names, and Evan Carday was instrumental in helping me get my mm-hmm. first job, and she was a partner with Steven at that time. And so I remember signing, quote, having a conversation with these two managers who were partners, and then going to you and going like, I don't know if the confetti didn't come out of the ceiling. So I'm not sure, did I sign? Like there was no paper slid across a desk to me.
Right.
There was no nothing. Right. There was just a kind of an informal conversation. Am I signed? And you, I don't know if you remember you, but you, this is when you first told me that story that, yeah, you thought it was going to be like signing day mm-hmm. and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were probably a represented writer at this moment. You just don't realize it.
Yeah. And you were probably still skeptical. Even though I told you that, I bet you were still skeptical. Like, does Sherm even know?
Yeah. I was like, I don't know. They didn't really say anything like that. They just said like, we'll talk later. What does that mean?
I love it. This is a great topic. This is something I think we will keep coming back to because it's, there are many different ways to skin this cat in terms of breaking into the industry and getting reps. So I think there's more to discuss. We can one day tell our stories about how we secured agents, how we secured lawyers, all of the above. But, I don't want to dwell on it too much, Shu, because we have excellent guests coming up.
Yeah. I think it's a great segue because as we talked about at the beginning, like this, we really wanted to focus this week on like what it means to come up, especially at the beginning parts of your career.
Yes. And I want to say that, we have talked to two writers back to back who are deep into their career and really reaching that sort of pinnacle level of their career. And I thought it was important just because of the nature, I think, of the people who listen to us and the people we're trying to reach, to talk to people who were closer to the beginning of their career and really are out here crushing it.
That's right. And so that's a good segue to bring in, why don't you intro our guest, Sherm?
All right. I got my homie, Courtney Perdue. I got my other homie, B, because I don't want to butcher her name, but I'm going to let her say it exactly the way she wants y'all to pronounce it. Courtney and B, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
This is dope because this is the first time, Shu, that we've had two guests simultaneously, and this is the first time that we've spoken to a writing team.
Yes, this is really going to test our interview skills to figure out how we do this exactly. But yes, it's good to be to experiment on the fly.
So tell me a little bit about how you guys came into the writing world, how you guys met each other, how you guys formed a partnership, and sort of take me up to the point where you guys got your first break, whether it be representation or, you know, your first staffing job.
Where do we
such
start?
A winding story.
give me the 5 minute. Give me the 5 minute version of each half of your story.
Yeah. So we started out as little babes, and eventually we got to the point where we finished college and had to figure out what was next. So
did you guys go to film school?
I'm getting there, Sherman. I'm getting there.
Well, you already said that you graduated college. It seems like you skipped right over it.
We went to grad school.
Okay, break it down.
We both ended up applying to Syracuse, and that's how we met. I'll let B talk about her side of it a little more, but I did not go to any sort of film school. I applied to their advertising program, and that's how I got into Syracuse. But there was a Discovery Communications Fellowship, so they pretty much paid for the whole program to go there for grad school. It was a year-long program. So that's how I wound up at Syracuse, and every year they pick two recipients of that fellowship, and the other recipient of it happened to be B going into her program. So of course they were like, oh, you're both the recipients, you two should meet. And they put us together over an email. So it was like, hey, nice to meet you. I'll add you on Facebook. See you when I see it. And we thought that would probably be it. We weren't expecting to like hang out anymore, I guess, but obviously that changed.
Yeah.
I, going into Syracuse, was focused on entering the film industry. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, but I think like somewhere in the creative space, like an executive or producer of some sort, was the goal. So I applied to their television, radio, and film program. And so that was the track I was on.
So when we sort of ended up hanging out together because we had some friends that were in similar circles. And this is gonna be like a weird tangent for the story, but she was in the television, radio, film program. I was in advertising, but one of the first people that I met when we had our orientation day at Syracuse was a Black girl whose name was Courtney. So we ended up becoming really good friends, but she was also in the television, radio, film program. So her and B had classes together, and then a group of us started to sit together at like lunch breaks and breaks in between class. So that's when we sort of became aware of each other. But B and I really didn't get close until the programs were over and we moved out to Los Angeles, because another part of this fellowship was that we had to intern with Discovery Communications after. So we both wound up at their offices here on Santa Monica Boulevard. I was with TLC and B was with Discovery. So we were on the same building, same floor. So we started to see each other more and more and kind of did the whole, we're both moving out here. We don't know anybody. Where are you living? How are you getting to work? Let's learn more about the city. We're here together. So that's when we started to build more of a friendship.
So out of this friendship, a writing partnership is born. I always imagine these things. I've co-written a couple of things with other people, but I don't have a writing partner per se. And I always imagine these things come together like in the movies or something. Like there's like a glimmer of light in the sky and you both have this idea and you look into each other's eyes and you're like, you know, writing team or whatever. So
meet cute where they bump into each other in the hall and all their files go all over the place and then they look at each other?
Yeah, there's a typewriter involved. I don't know how. It's not period, but yes, there's some kind of, what was that moment for you guys, if there was a moment, and how did you like decide you're going to write together?
I don't know if it was one moment. I think it actually took a couple years for us to become writing partners after moving to LA. Like we both had our separate journeys into various positions in Hollywood as PAs and assistants and whatnot. It wasn't until I was a TV lit assistant at Paradigm talent agency, working for a TV lit agent, and Courtney was working at production company Amblin, where we were both reading scripts, the good, the bad, the very ugly of it all, and just kind of starting to really come into our realizations of wanting to pursue writing and really go for the thing for ourselves. It's like, if these people can sell scripts, if they can make this shitty thing, they can do art. So let's do it together. At that point, we were really good friends. We kind of, you know, we had similar goals and just the vibe was there. So it just kind of made sense for us to, you know, try to go for it together.
It was more of a meet cute of annoyance of all these other bad things that we'd read. So our meet cute moment was like, wow, this stuff is not good. We can do so much better. And then the spark went off. It was a magic moment.
But let me ask you to me, that would sort of, because I've always worked solo. I've never co-written anything. G-Swope. And so
flex. That was a flex. In case it's unclear, that was a flex.
So I would like to know. So when you, because I would think like, oh, we both realize that these things are shitty and that we could do much better. But how do you actually make the decision? Let's try to write together instead of like, oh, let's both conquer the world separately and we can be friends and colleagues, but we're going to write our own thing. How did you actually make the choice to come together on a script?
We just started talking and brainstorming and just had fun bouncing ideas back and forth. And it all, when we started working together, it sort of wound up as a, we're doing a lot of work as assistants, so we need a day that's just for us, for fun, for ourselves. So let's make it Sunday. And then we started meeting up at a local Starbucks on Fairfax and Melrose area so we could people watch and chill. And that's where we started talking and brainstorming and started writing. And that became our standing appointment for a long time until we upgraded to Coffee Commissary, also on Fairfax, because we weren't going far.
You must have got some money at that point, because Coffee Commissary versus Starbucks,
No money. Sometimes one of us would get a drink and the other wouldn't. Sometimes someone would get a drink and a snack. And it was like, oh, you balling now. And then other times we would just steal their Wi-Fi. But, you know, it is what it is.
What was the, so you come together, your meet cute is from we can do better than these motherfuckers out here, which, you know, starts, many, many careers have started that way. Great careers. So what's the thing that kind of gets you in the door? So you were an assistant, you guys were assistants. What takes you, gets you over the hump to getting paid as writers?
Well, I would say after we'd written about what, three things at the time, at the end of 2018, B was still at CW and I was working with Sherman on Legacies.
We should back up and say that we met, we haven't said this yet, like we met when I was a story editor on the CW show Legacies, and Court was my main man holding down the writer's assistant chair. Little did I know that flash forward 2 years, he would be basically conquering the industry and basically have totally caught up in my slim head start that I had in my career. Pretty soon, Courtney's going to be my boss. I'll be his writer assistant.
Okay, that's not going to happen. You've also got many films under your belt. Let's be real. But at the end of 2018, we had entered, well, mid-2018, I guess, we'd entered this competition because, you know, everyone will look for the ABC programs, NBC, Warner Brothers, all of those different writing programs that give people a chance to kind of start their career. We saw a competition for Color Creative and BET. So Color Creative is Issa Rae's company, and then, of course, BET. But they were looking for new voices, diverse writers with diverse stories to tell. And B and I were like, oh, we're that. Let's send in this one pager and enter this competition. So we sent all that in, and long story short, we made it to the final rounds of this competition, the top three. And that took us to the American Black Film Festival in Miami. And we got to meet all of these amazing people and did some roundtables with showrunners, producers, other directors. And we met Issa and her team. And when that was all over, we did the development process on our script with BET and Color Creative. So they gave us rounds of notes. We adjusted things. We went through the whole process with them. And then at the end, BET was going to pick a winner because they were going to produce a low budget version of the pilot for whoever won. And the thing that they told us was, while we didn't win, more of that had to do with the fact that our show just wasn't fitting the mandate for their network and what they needed on their screens. But they really loved us and wanted to work with us. So right before they made that decision, they were pushing really hard because they asked us if we had reps, and we'd happened to get a manager right before we even got to the finals of the competition. And then they helped us get signed at Gersh. So then we had an agent, because what they were going to offer us was a blind script deal off of the contest. So we walked away with an agent and a blind script deal. And that's sort of where it started at the end of 2018. And then we had a bunch of showrunner meetings toward the end of the year. And then the one that hit was one that we had at the top of 2019. And that got us our first staff job on Bigger on BET Plus.
I want to back up real quick because I think there's such a valuable lesson in something you just said, which is you did not win the competition. The actual competition that you were fighting to win, you didn't win, but you actually had an even bigger come up off of that quote unquote loss because you walked away with a blind script deal, which is like amazing. Not very many people get those. And you had full representation at a really reputable company that could help get you jobs in the future. And I think that's such a valuable lesson because I've actually seen that trend during my career too, Shu, which is like, you know, sometimes you'll go in for a pitch and you won't get the job, but you'll make so many fans in the room that when those people go on to other companies or they talk to other executives, they're saying your name more than the person who probably got this to actually write the script.
100%. 100%. And in fact, I think there's like, I think there's something is in the minds of executives or whoever who reads something that they love that just for whatever dumb Hollywood reason, you guys mentioned mandates, for example, for some like artificial reason doesn't get made or doesn't get sort of in front of people. I think even more, it makes executives feel like we got to find something. We got to do something with these people because it's almost like they got robbed by the industry itself, you know? So yeah, absolutely.
So real quick, B, before you guys continue on your story, B, can you tell me a little bit about how you, since we're talking about landing reps, how did you get that initial manager that you got before you even completed the contest?
Well, that manager happened through a connection, like through a friend slash coworker of Courtney's that was a former coworker slash friend of our manager. Mm-hmm. And so our manager was looking, you know, for, you know, new writers. And so, you know, our friend thought about us, you know, had read our material, liked our material and was like, oh, I know people. And so he, you know, with our permission, shot our stuff to the manager. We met with him, liked his energy and signed with him.
Signed. Did you guys get a contract?
No.
Not a conversation. I was like, okay, we're going to work together.
I love it.
Did things fly out of the sky? Was there champagne popping?
No cameras, nothing.
We did get coffees, though, that we didn't have to pay for. I think I had a matcha latte that was delicious.
That's dope. How did you guys personally, you two as a writing team, how did you personally celebrate getting a rep?
We walked out of that meeting and said, yeah, I guess we have a manager. And I walked back down the street to Hollywood Production Center to go work as the writer's assistant on Legacies.
Courtney, did you tell me right away? Did you tell? I don't remember. I vaguely remember when all this was going on because I remember when you left to go to Miami for the American Black Film Festival. But did you tell me? Did you like say, yo, Sharm, I just signed with a rep, or did you keep it close to the chest?
I don't remember if I did or not. I might have told you, but it was just a whirlwind because truly we had that meeting and I think 9 a.m. It ended by 9:30, and then I hustled back down the street and plopped into that seat just as everyone was walking in and said, let's break story.
So I wonder if you guys can talk about it because we've not talked about it much on this show, at least. Do you guys feel that your assistant experience, you were a writer's assistant, Courtney, you were a development assistant, B, did that help you guys in either breaking in or becoming the writers that you've become?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like even in the competition, I remember the execs at one point were like, you know, with our notes process, they were like, you guys don't ask that many questions. Like you just seem to go with everything very easily. And it's like, well, I work in development. This is a process that I'm a part of every day. And Courtney, having worked at Amblin, also it's a process he was very much aware of. So we were very keen on just kind of the process and note-taking to begin with. And so I think it served us very well in how we turned around our script in the process. And I think also really did help in, you know, pushing them towards giving us that blind script deal. They were like, well, these people kind of know what they're doing. They seem to be on it. So let's give them something to work on.
Like we understood the idea of the note behind the note and that you don't always have to answer everything right away on a call. And if there was something that didn't make sense at all, we would ask that, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And on another level too, just outside of the notes process, for both of us being on two different ends of the assistant production spectrum. So B was with a buyer, CW, who buys all the projects, and then being at Amblin, who was a seller that was pitching to everyone, we kind of saw it from both sides. So it also gave us a chance to understand how different networks and executives also note differently and give notes and what they're looking for. So that's always something we've thought about when breaking stories and coming up with ideas, like what networks would this best fit on based off of what we know from the time that we've spent assisting other people.
Yeah.
And then also just on the writing front and getting started to get that coveted writer's assistant job on my end, that came directly from Amblin. Like, I was there 2.5 years. Then we started developing The Haunting of Hill House for Netflix. And when that sold to Netflix and they were getting ready to start up The Room, I was like, I want to be a writer's assistant on that. I want to go work on that show. And I still had to go through the whole interview process with the showrunner and the number two, but I left Amblin and went straight onto that. So it was just, it was a nice trajectory to be with the companies that work with all the writers so that you could kind of track when things were going to happen and then say, I'm going to jump. This is my time.
It also sounds like that was intentional for you guys. It sounds like you made intentional, don't let me put words in your mouth, but it sounds like choosing that path, especially the way you just described it, Courtney, was an intentional thing. It wasn't like you just, you know, found yourself in an assistant job. You had a direction of where you wanted to go.
I think it was a little bit of both. And I think it plays on both of us differently since we originally came out here with different goals. I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do in TV. Like, I want to, you know, want to be a multi-hyphenate one day, act, direct, write, all of those things. But I didn't know where I was starting or what this whole business was like. So getting in at Amblin was just a great chance to literally learn everything. Because since they were developing so many projects, they had to work with the writers, they worked with the talent, and then there was watching them cast the project and then seeing all the cuts. So going through all of that, it kind of just helped us, or helped me figure out where I wanted to start and where I wanted to be. And the writing thing was, it was a perfect segue into writing.
Okay, wait. So let me, I would like to ask this question. This is a question that I really wanted to ask both you guys. Do I have it correct that you guys have done 5 seasons of television in less than 2 years?
Yes.
Are you on your 5th right now, or you've already done 5?
We're on our 5th. So we did Bigger season 1 and 2, Trinkets, season 2, the season 1 of The Gossip Girl 2.0 on HBO Max, and now we're on Just Beyond for Disney Plus.
What? How? Amazing.
Yes, how? How?
Are these like 6-episode shows?
Bigger, both seasons were 10 episodes, but we had 10 weeks both times to write those. Trinkets was also 10 episodes, and that was about 14 weeks. Gossip Girl was 10 episodes, and that was 20 weeks. And Just Beyond is 8 episodes, and that's 20 weeks, which will be up at the end of this month. So we'll be free if anyone wants to hire us for season 6 of a show.
Shu, yep. This is really interesting to me because, you know, we are a little bit older than these young geniuses who are skyrocketing up the ladder. But I think that when you talk to writers who are even older than us, the idea has always been in the past, get as many weeks on one show as you can possibly get. Oh man, we're getting extended. Oh great, I can't wait to be in this room for 40 weeks straight, right? And we're seeing with that, I'm just saying that B and Courtney are using these short orders to their advantage, because they're not getting bogged down on one show for 40 weeks. They're doing, you know, 15 weeks here, 20 weeks there, and they're using it to increase their rate and to increase their title. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. What do you guys think? I mean, is it a neck break pace for you, or does it feel like, hey, this is the way?
After Bigger, we did have a little bit of a rest, a few months to kind of like get our bearings after our first staff job. And then from there, it really was back to back. Like, we had to leave Trinkets like a couple weeks early to go to Gossip Girl. We had to leave Gossip Girl a couple weeks early to go to Bigger season 2. And so that was, those were faster moves, but because they were all so different, also tonally, and the rooms were all, like, so far we've been blessed with really great rooms. It just kind of was easy to go to these different rooms and just kind of ease into the shows. And so it hasn't really felt like it's too much. Also, because they are all 10 episodes or less, we're less bogged down with having to, you know, work on 20 episodes. And so it really feels like a good amount of time to be on something and then move on.
I sort of hear what Courtney and B are saying, Shu, because I've liked all my TV jobs for different reasons. But in terms of length, the best length that I think I've had is that 20-week contract that I got the first time.
For sure. No question.
It's just like you feel like it's in, it's out, but it's still enough time to really do everything you need. And then you're like creatively free to sort of think about other stuff and to take other jobs and to pursue other things. And then you come back and you do another show sometime later. It does get difficult when you're doing a really long show and you're in the room for most of the year. You do feel like you've dedicated a whole year to a show. And then you take a little break and you dedicate another year to a show. So I sort of am envious of the fact that these guys have been so light on their feet dancing around this industry, going from job to job.
I think it's admirable. Yeah, 100%. The last thing I'll just ask is, you know, we try to do this podcast. Obviously, it's about craft, business, but it's also about culture. And we try to, you know, do things or at least speak to folks from a kind of a distinctly Black point of view. I just want to know if you guys can talk about how, if and how that has factored into your experiences coming up through the ranks and literally working in rooms day to day.
I guess I would say that in the rooms that we've been in, definitely our very first show was a very Black show. So it was just a lot of fun to have our first staff job be so open and welcome and feel like you could literally say a bit of anything and have a conversation about a bit of anything. But all the rooms that we've been in have been very inclusive, and their goal has been to tell more diverse stories and have those points of view come across. And specifically when we were on Trinkets, the episode that we got to write dealt with one of the three leads who is biracial, but she was sort of coming into her Blackness more. So we got to tell a story about racial profiling, but also how she decided to deal with that and overcome it. So it was very, as people have said, timely, even though we know that it's not so much that it's timely, it's just that it's become a bigger thing in the public eye right now. But season 2 aired during this pandemic and all of the unrest that has been all across the media. So it worked in that regard. But our showrunners had always intended to tell that story when we were writing it. And same thing with this new Gossip Girl. It's a lot more diverse. So there's different POVs that are coming across. And even with Just Beyond, our showrunner has been great. He wanted to build a diverse room because people are realizing that you get the best stories when you're dealing with all different types of voices. So most of the rooms that we've been in have been very mixed rooms, be it Black, white, Asian, trans, gay, whatever. We've had a lot of rooms that have been that inclusive, which has been great.
Word. B, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything Courtney has said. Like, a great room starts with the showrunner, and we have been so far lucky to have showrunners who, you know, if they're not people of color, they're very much allies, and they're open to hearing from your perspective and respectful about it. And that really does go a long way in kind of building that trust in the room and really building out fully fleshed out characters. And, you know, we haven't had any bad rooms, but it also does help that there's two of us. So, like, we're never going to be the only Black person in the room.
Yeah, that's great. That's built in. Because
our perspectives on things, even as the maybe two Black people in the room, are different. So it's never going to be a situation of all Black people do this. And if it is a situation that's like that, we're very much like, well, all the Black people that we know would never say this.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think, Shu, we should maybe wrap it up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Thank you, guys. That was really fantastic.
It was awesome. So thank you so much to Courtney and B. This has been a fantastic conversation all about their come up. You will obviously be hearing their names quite a bit if their trend continues. They are ascending writers to watch, and we really appreciate you guys sharing your story and providing some insight into how TV industry works these days for young writers. But as always, we're going to go to our evergreen topic one of my favorite things to do every episode, Shukri, is to tell people what not to do. A lot of people can tell you what to do. A lot of people can be all positive and shit. That's not what we do around here. We tell you what not to do. Don't do that shit. Let's go. So I would actually like to extend first, as a courtesy, as any good host, I would like to extend it to our guests first. I would actually like to ask B to start us off. What would you like to tell the listeners this week not to do?
Okay, so this felt so obvious. It's like, I don't even know if I want to say it, but it's happened to me a lot more recently. And so my don't do that shit is, please, 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 if you want me to read your material or anybody to read your material, seriously, do not send in sloppy work or sloppy material. I've gotten scripts that were like in crazy fonts or written in Word. Or just somebody sent me their script, like their series pitch, and they literally just copied and pasted all of their random notes from their notes app and pasted it into their Gmail to me and was like, what do you think of my show? And it was like, I need you to reorganize this and send it back to me if you really want me to read it with a proper eye to help you. And so it's a little obvious, but please, please, please be more organized with your material if you want people to read it.
And I would like to, I'd like to add into that, that for people that are writing it in Word and things like that, like there's free software to use. We're not saying go buy fast. Like there's Writer Duet, there's Highland. Like you can find a free screenwriting software. Yeah. So don't use Word. Yeah.
There's really no excuse for Word at this point. I mean, there really isn't. That's, come on.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah. I think you're right to think it's obvious, but I also think that you're right to think that people really need to hear that shit. Do not send in sloppy work. Do a little cursory research, people, to figure out what the industry standard is, and then try your hardest to duplicate that. Don't do that shit. Courtney, what about you?
My don't do that shit is don't waste real estate. And recently for me as well, reading scripts that people have sent in asking for notes and things like that, I've noticed that people like to get really verbose in their descriptions and their action lines, but also to make a statement to the reader, they've done some crazy spacing. And while I can appreciate that, and maybe you want to do that more if you're writing like a film versus TV, maybe potentially, like don't add four extra lines to then write a word so I get the emphasis of that word, because that's four extra lines of space that you could have used to actually tell the story, build the characters, develop the world. Like, don't waste the page count. Don't waste the page count.
Love it. That's is great advice that people need to hear. Shukri, me or you, man? You tell me. You tell me how you want to roll. You want to close this out today? I can go.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Mine is very, very simple. It's not going to take much explanation. My don't do that shit for this week is, don't give up on your ideas too early, man. I told you before, don't hold on to ideas too long, and I'm contradicting myself because the truth is somewhere in the middle. Don't give up on your ideas too early. I sometimes look back on half, this is advice to myself, self, don't give up on ideas too early. I have a folder full of half-finished scripts. Some of them are pretty good. And if I would just take the time to finish them and not let the one little problem that's causing me trouble in that moment, if I would really buckle down and finish them, I would be much better off. If I would just write another draft to fix some of the very simple problems and story mechanics that weren't working in the first draft, I would be better off. I would have more work to show people. I would have a wider variety of material out there. And so I want to encourage everybody listening today, don't give up on your ideas too early. See them through to the end. Make sure you get them done. Give them that extra rewrite to try to get them in the best shape. There might be more there than you think. Don't give up on your ideas too early.
That's a good one. Even though it's a little contradictory to the other one, I like it.
Listen, hey, this is the duality of life, bro. There's no simple answers, man. There's yin and yang, bro. There's black and white. It all exists. So I'm just encompassing the fullness of the human experience and the writer's experience.
Well, that's good, because mine this week is also not a craft one specifically, but it is an industry don't do that shit. And it's really a positive that I'm turning into a negative for don't do that shit. And the negative expression of it is don't hate on other people's success.
And say it again for the people in the back.
Don't hate on other people's success, especially other black people. But that's neither here nor there. Don't hate on other people's success. You know, I know you agree with this, Sherm, because we talk about it often. And we tease a little bit. We teased, you know, Courtney and B a little bit about their meteoric rise in 2 years to showrunner or whatever. But it really is true that, you know, in this world of television and film and Hollywood, especially amongst people of color, there's a lot of food on the table and there's enough for us all to eat. So when you see that Deadline article and you read about this or hear about that person or see this person who you don't know or whatever have success, be happy for that person, man. Bask in their success. Their success is your success. It means that the road is being paved for you also. So don't be one of those jokers that's like, man, fuck that person or whatever. Don't hate on other people's success. There's enough food for us all to eat and be happy for them.
I love that show. I love that, especially in terms of the black side of the industry, because I honestly never watched 15 minutes of Empire, but when Empire was popping, it opened the doors for so many meetings and discussions about black TV shows and projects. And like, so their success led indirectly to a lot of other people's success. And so like, we gotta, especially in the black side of the industry, we got to root for everybody black.
Yes, 100%.
Word. Well, that wraps us up for today.
Yes.
Okay, let's close it out, Shu. You have been listening to The Diversity Hires. You can find us across all social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Div Hires Pod. I'm your host, Sherman Payne.
And I'm Shukri Hassan Tillman. This show is produced by the wonderful AKB, August K. Burton. And like he said, remember to follow us. Find us at thediversityhires.com. Look forward to the next episode dropping weekly, and we look forward to seeing you this and every week at The Diversity Hires. Come back and check us out. See you next time.
Anywhere you find podcasts, that's where you'll find us. Like, share, subscribe. Peace, y'all.